Hello, friends. Welcome to Read 'em and Weep. It's me, your host, Sammy. I got three hands for you guys today. One that I played good, one that I played bad, one that I'm actually not that sure about. I'll let you guys be the judge, but we're not going to do a lot of pussyfooting around. Let's get right into the hands. All right, hand one. This hand, actually all the hands in this podcast come from a 5-10 session I played at Stone's Gambling Hall the other day. This hand, the under the gun player, who's a tight player, opens for 30. The player next to him, who's also pretty tight, now flats a 30, and it gets to me third to act, and I look down at pocket nines. And this is my first decision point of the hand. I think pocket nines is a strong enough hand to three bet here. I think it can go either way. If either of these players was looser, I would probably go with the three bet just because they won't be playing like really strong ranges, and pocket nine stacks up very nicely against wide, weak ranges. But against two tight players, they're going to be tight, and their ranges from the first two positions are going to be especially tight. So for that reason, I decide just to flat. And pocket nines is a hand that's going to play really well in a single raise pop, multi-way. Like, even if some people behind me come in, that's fine. I can just kind of play fit or fold, whether I hit or set or not. But in this hand, nobody ends up coming in behind. The initial guy raises under the gun. The guy next to act calls. I call with pocket nines. Everybody else folds. And we go three ways to a flop. And the flop comes ace, five, deuce with two diamonds. The top two cards are diamonds. Ace, five, deuce, two diamonds. I have pocket nines with the nine of diamonds. So I flop second pair and a backdoor flush draw. Pretty marginal hand. The original player who raised under the gun now c-bets 40 into 100. The player in between us folds and it gets to me. And I think that this hand can easily just be folded. You know, I know I have second pair and you don't generally want to fold second pair to a small bet. But in this formation, it's really, really, really marginal, right? It's ace, five, deuce. The original raiser who is under the gun now c-bets into two other players who have pretty tight ranges on an ace high flop. So I expect his range to be pretty strong. He's going to have a lot of ace X, you know, ace kings and ace queens. And then he'll also have a decent amount of pocket pairs, probably like pocket kings, pocket queens, pocket jacks. I don't expect him to be c-betting like his broadways all that often. Like if he's got king queen or king jack or something like that on ace five deuce, I think it's fairly unlikely that he'd c-bet into two other players. I don't know this guy that well, so I can't really say, but in the time I've been there, he's been playing pretty snug. So I don't expect him to c-bet those hands all that often. So when he bets here, like I said, I just think he's got something usually pretty good. And when he's got something that's usually pretty good, that means pocket nines kind of sucks. So I think folding this hand, just throwing it away, is totally fine. But it's a close spot. And in these close spots, I kind of like to lean on a couple different heuristics. Like number one, am I in position? The answer here is yes. Being in position affords you a lot of power on different runouts. Even if I don't end up hitting my hand, maybe I can bluff later, etc. You know, being in position, I'm just way more apt to continue in the hand than if I were out of position and had to check call and then play out of position the rest of the streets. The other thing I tend to look at is the orientation of the suits in my hand. So in this hand, that orientation of the suits is very favorable. Remember, it's ace, five, deuce with two diamonds on the flop. I have pocket nines with the nine of diamonds. Having pocket nines with the nine of diamonds here is really good for a couple reasons. First off, pretty obviously, I have a backdoor flush draw. So if it comes running diamonds, I make a flush, and sometimes that's good. More importantly, if I were going to peel here and another diamond rolled off on the turn, a third diamond, I could start turning my hand into a bluff. And so that definitely gives me equity in a way that, like, I can start trying to win the hand without actually making a hand. And then thirdly, and this is a little more of a subtle point, but there's a small chance that I turn a set. You know what I mean? There's two nines left in the deck. There is a small chance that that happens. And if that happens, I don't want it to be a third diamond, because if it's a third diamond, there's no way I get paid by like ace king or ace queen. At least I don't get paid huge, because if it's a third diamond, somebody with ace king or ace queen is going to be like, oh, you know, they're scared of the flush. Whereas if it's, you know, the nine of spades or whatever, it's just way more innocuous. It's just way more or hidden. They'll never expect that I turned a set on that kind of card. It looks like a blank. So having pocket nines with the nine of diamonds here, I think kind of shifts a pretty marginal spot into one that leads me to making the call. If I had something like two black nines, I would definitely just fold it here. So I decide to make the call of the 40 and kind of see what happens. And the turn comes the eight of diamonds, putting the third diamond on the board. So again, ace five deuce on the flop with two diamonds. The guy C bets and I call with pocket nines with the nine of diamonds. And then the eight of diamonds comes on the turn. And now, as I expected, my friend checks. And this is not a surprise. I expect him to do a lot of checking here. Like I said, his range has a lot of ace X in it, and his ace X really just doesn't want to keep betting because he knows of the hands that I continue with on this flop or flush draws. So he checks, and now my decision is, do I check back and try to see if my hand's good on the river, maybe hit another diamond on the river and improve in some way, or do I turn my hand into a bluff? And I'm sure you guys have seen the title of the episode. I am going to turn my hand into a bluff. Like I said, I just don't think my showdown value, based on what I think he was c-betting with on the flop, I just don't think my showdown value is that high here. So as a general rule, I don't really like trying to make hands to win. I try to find ways to win pots without making my hand and kind of use making a good hand as a fallback. And this is a good bluff card for me, especially because he's almost always capped at one pair. So I start thinking about running a bluff, and I start thinking, if I had actually made a flush, what would I do? And I think the answer is I would bet small on the turn and bet big on the river. And so that's what I decide to do here, is I bet small. I know he's not going to fold on the turn. If he had something like ace queen, would he fold to one bet? A fucking course not. But that's all right. What I'm going to do is bet small here and then lay the hammer on the river. I'm going to run a multi-street bluff. And that requires really thinking through it. I think so often people try to bluff and they just like take a shot, and when it doesn't work, they just give up. And it's like, no, dude, you've got to actually run a bluff. You got to think through it. So that's what I try to do here. Following that logic, I bet 75 into 180, less than half of the pot. Like I said, not expecting him to fold hardly ever here. And he does not surprise me when he makes the call. The river comes a really good card. It comes an offsuit four, putting a one-liner to a wheel on board. So ace five deuce with two diamonds, then the eight of diamonds on the turn, and now an offsuit four on the river. So any three makes a straight, and he checks again. And like I said, I think this card is especially good because it just adds something scarier to the board. Like, if he was a good hand reader, he should know that I almost never have a three in my hand here. But when he's sitting there with something like one pair, he's got ace X a lot, like I said. I think sometimes he'll have pocket pairs that also contain a diamond, something like, I don't know, pocket queens with the queen of diamonds, pocket jacks with the jack of diamonds, I think makes sense from his perspective. I think if he had something like black queens, he would have folded those on the turn. But if he had a pocket pair with a diamond, I think he continues. But like I said, the four just puts that much more pressure on one pair of hands. One more thing I could possibly have that beats them. So he checks, and there's about 330 in the pot. And now I decide to follow through with the plan that I had, which was bet small on the turn, bet large on the river. So I decide to go 300 into 330. And he goes into the tank. And he goes into the tank, and he shuffles his cards, and he shakes his head. And he doesn't know anything about me. We haven't been playing that long together. I don't know, maybe like 30 minutes or so. I haven't really done anything like crazy or out of line. Like I've just kind of been playing like a regular guy. And from his perspective, this has to look just like super credible. Like, what the fuck would I be bluffing here with? He has no idea that I'm turning a pair with a diamond into a multi-street bluff. Like, people don't generally do those sorts of things. He just like has no idea that I'm capable of that. So in the end, he has to give me credit, and he folds the hand, and I take it down. And I'm very proud of this one. I think it's just one of those hands where if you're going to peel light, you need to be creative in the ways that you try to win the hand. You can't just sit there and be like, oh, yeah, hopefully I hit a nine, or hopefully I get to showdown and win cheaply. That's just not going to be profitable, right? You have to find these spots where all of a sudden you know that if you were in that other guy's shoes and you had something like ace queen, that you just despise this run out. And it's just so credible that the other guy had a flush or a two pair or a set or something like that. But like one pair is like never good there. And so he folds the hand. Congratulations to me for pulling this one off. I thought it was pretty slick. Allow myself to congratulate myself. All right. That's a cool little bluff that I pulled off. Let's move on to hand two. Not as cool of a bluff, I'll be honest. Stay tuned for that. Hand two, 5-10 of stones. I am under the gun and I look down at 8-6 of clubs. Pretty loose open. GTO ranges will tell you just to fold this hand. But, you know, I just never met a suit gap where I didn't want to play. So I open it up to 30. It folds around to the button and the button makes the call and the big blind completes. And we go three ways to flop where I'm in the middle. And the flop is pretty bad. It's 10-9-9. No club. So I have 8-6 of clubs. I flop a gutter, the idiot end of a gutter, to a 7. The big blind checks, and I don't really love this board to c-bet. Yes, I have a gutter, but I don't have any backdoor possibilities in terms of flushes. And also 10-9-9 is a board where two caller ranges are going to interact pretty well with it. There's going to be a lot of 10x, there's going to be 9x, there's going to be Queen Jack and King Queen and King Jack and, you know, just a bunch of hands that kind of wrap around this 10-9-9 flop. So I don't necessarily really think c-betting it does a lot for me. And there are plenty of hands that I would have that I would be checking here as well, like fairly strong hands. So I do check and the button checks back, flop checks through. The turn gives me an open-ended straight draw when it comes in offsuit Jack, putting a second heart on board. So 10-9-9 on the flop and then an offsuit Jack on the turn. And now the big blind checks again. And I actually decide to take a shot here because I feel the big blind, if he had Jack X or he had 9X or something like that, he would have bet himself. He would have kind of let out himself. And I kind of feel like the button would have probably taken a shot on the flop if he had a Jack in his hand. Right, if he had like two overs with a straight draw, something like Queen Jack or King Jack, something like that, I could see him bluffing with those hands. Maybe not always, I don't know, but like I think the odds that he has a Jack are kind of diminished. Certainly, bluffing against two other players on like a pretty connected middle board like this is pretty thin. But there are scenarios where one guy's got like ace high, like, you know, ace deuce of diamonds or whatever, and the other guy's got pocket fours or some sort of hand like that. So I decide to just take a small bet and see if I can fold out those bullshit ass, weak ass hands. And I bet 40 into 90. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Both players call. Because like I said, I don't expect either of them to have a lot of Jack X based on their actions. I don't think either of them will have 9X here kind of at all. I would have expected a raise from anybody who had a 9 or better than that. So it's certainly possible that somebody's calling along with two hearts. Anybody who had a queen in their hand, something like Queen X, you know, Queen 7 suited, I think probably peel here. So we'll see what happens on the river. It's an offsuit deuce. And now the big blind checks again. And I decide to go for it. When both of these players called me on the turn, I was just like, ah, shit. Well, I took a shot. I'm freaking done with it. Maybe it's worth taking a shot here. So I decide to go for it. I bet 150 into about 210. The button thinks about it, shakes his head, and he folds. Fuck yeah. One down, one to go. Gets back to the big blind who led with a check. And he starts shaking his head too. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's going to throw his hand away. Let's go. And then he says, I got a pretty weak hand. I can only beat ace king. And then I'm like, shit, maybe he's got like 10X. You know what I mean? Something like queen 10. I don't know. Something that could play that way. So he thinks about it for a little bit. And then he just shrugs and puts the money in. And I quickly table my 8 high. And he turns over pocket 8s. Pocket 8s on jack 10. 9-9 deuce. Now, I think this was a pretty ill-advised bluff by me. Like, first of all, I got to give credit to this guy for making the call. You know, I can't like get into his mind and think exactly what he was thinking, but certainly he thought through the hand well and thought that thought it was fairly unlikely that I turned a really good hand with the jack and like, you know, what do I have? Like ace jack? You know, sometimes, but from his perspective, I can also have ace king a lot and I can have ace queens and stuff like that. And he made the call. I think that shows a flaw in my bluff that like there were so many hands that were incentivized to bluff here and not enough value that I could represent. And from that perspective on this run out, you know, it just didn't make a ton of sense. I think the reality is I opened a shitty hand from early position, a hand that I should be folding. And then I bluffed into two players on the turn in a fairly ill-advised spot. And then I decided once they both put money in on the turn, I just decided I should hope that they both have draws. And I bluffed again on the river. And I just think that this was pretty optimistic all the way around by me. I think I was a little bit of trying too hard. Certainly, I had them pegged fairly well in terms of them not having a lot of strength. So I think I read that well. To attack that. But when you start playing higher stakes, like 5-10 and above, you know, the players are generally good enough to make fairly good hand reads. And if you bluff in spots where there's just like way more bluffs than value, they will figure that stuff out. And I think it was fairly obvious here. If I was in his spot, I would have called too. So I think this was just an overall kind of punt by me. And it starts with the preflop open. You know, it starts by from opening a suited one gapper from under the gun. It should just be a fold. So I ended up torching several hundred dollars on a poor decision after subsequent poor decision, fire my ass into the goddamn sun. Like Jesus, Sammy, come on, man, quit burning money. All right, that's hand two. We'll go to hand three, a little bit of a bonus hand. Like I said, it's a hand that I'm not sure how good it was or how bad it was, but I'll let you be the judge of that. Stay tuned for that. All right, throw me a freaking bonus hand here. Hand three, still playing 5-10 at Stone's Gambling Hall. I am under the gun yet again, and I look down at 6-5 of diamonds and open to 30. Now, I just finished berating myself for opening 8-6 suited under the gun, so you might be thinking, oh, well, why are you opening 6-5 suited? I mean, frankly, 6-5 suited is just a way better hand than 8-6 suited. Like direct suited connectors are way better than suited one gappers. And 6-5 is a hand that I love to open from early position because it gives me a lot of board coverage on different boards. You know, I'd hate for a board to come down, you know, 6-5 deuce or something like that. And I just never have hands that connect with those. Fuck all that. So I'm actually fully on board with opening this hand under the gun. And I open to 30 and it gets to middle position. And there's a very kind of ABC type of reg who now three bets me to 95. Everybody folds and it gets back to me. And like I said, this guy, yeah, he's just been playing pretty ABC. He's a guy that's there quite a bit, seems to know everybody, has been having conversations with other players about, oh yeah, I went and played this tournament. Oh yeah, me and this guy are going to Vegas for the series, you know, this and that. This guy's like, you know, definitely a regular. But I've been playing with him for a couple of hours, and he's just kind of been playing, like I said, pretty straightforwardly. I don't know that I've seen him make a three bet yet. So when he three bets me, I think, especially when I'm under the gun, I think that he almost always has a very strong range here. That's great news for me because I have a hand that plays really well against strong ranges. I would love for him to have a big pair, something like that, because if I get the right kind of flop, we're going to go. And we're pretty deep here. We're like, I don't know, 2,500, 3K, if I'm remembering correctly. And so I decide to make the call. Now, if we were shorter, I think it would be a definite fold. And even in this spot, like, I don't think it's a mandatory peel. You know what I mean? Like, calling three bets with suited connectors at a position, normally a losing proposition. But like I said, against a player who I have a pretty good handle on the types of ranges he's playing, and he seems to be pretty predictable from my perspective, I think it's worth playing the hand. So I decide to call the 95, and we go to a flop of ace 10-5 with two spades and one diamond. Ace 10-5, two spades, one diamond. I have 6-5 of diamonds, so I flop bottom pair with a backdoor flush draw. Not that great, honestly, because even though like I have a decent hand, ace-10-5 is just going to connect with his range a lot better than mine. He's going to have way more ace-king than I'm going to have. He's going to have more pocket aces than I'm going to have, et cetera, et cetera. So I check, and now he down bets to 65, about one-third pot. And I think, kind of like the first hand, I think folding here is just fine because he's got such kind of a nut advantage on this kind of board, and he's in position, et cetera. But in the end, because his bet was so small, you know, I think it's marginal, but I think continuing is fine considering the type of hand that I have. Bottom pair with a backdoor flush draw. So I decide to make the call, peel one, and the turn comes, no help, it's an offsuit deuce. I brick everything. So ace-10-5 with two spades and one diamond on the flop. I have 6-5 of diamonds. I check call a bet, and then an offsuit deuce, like the deuce of hearts, comes on the turn, and now I am just done with the hand. So I check, and I'm just going to fold to any bet, but surprisingly, he checks back. And when he checks back, he's extremely capped, because if he had a hand like pocket aces or pocket tens, one of those sets, if he had ace-10, even if he had a big ace, like ace-king, ace-queen, why would he not continue to bet here? Like if it was a really dry board, I could see him checking back for pot control or deception or something like that. But because there's two spades on board and there's a lot of straight draws available, there's gutter balls, right, with the ace-10. So Broadway gutter balls, you know, now wheel gutter balls. I just don't see why he would check those hands. So when he checks back, I think, wow, he doesn't have any of those hands, or at least he shouldn't at very high frequency. And then the turn comes, what I consider a really good card to bluff on. It comes the jack of spades, putting a third spade on board. So ace-10-5 with two spades on the flop, an offsuit deuce on the turn, and then the jack of spades on the river, third spade, and now it's my time to go for it. Because like I said, I just don't think that he's got a lot of those strong hands in his range anymore when he checks back the turn. I think he's got a lot of big pairs, right? Pair of kings, pair of queens. Sometimes he has a pair of jacks and just made a set, in which case I'm not going to get him to fold. But if he's got kings or queens, I can make him fold really easily. So I decide to bet, and I don't decide to polarize. And the reason I don't want to polarize is because I don't want it to be a situation where he decides I either have a flush or nothing. I want my bet sizing to reflect a range that could have a lot of two pairs in it. Maybe I have ace jack. Maybe I have ace 10. Maybe I have jack 10. Maybe I have bottom set of five, something like that. But more likely the two pairs. I want my range to contain the two pairs. I think I'd probably do a decent amount of check raising with bottom set on the flop. But what I don't want to do is just go pot and him to be like, oh, this guy would never do this without at least a flush for value. So he's got a flush or nothing. Like I said, I want my range to be expansive. And so what would I do with a range like that? Well, I'd bet a little more than half pot. So there's 330 in the pot. I decide to make a solid bet of 175, maybe like 55% pot. And he thinks about it, and he thinks about it, and he shakes his head, and he folds the hand. And I win it. Hot damn. Now, I actually really do like this bluff. I thought it was creative. I always think it's creative. You're going for a straight, and the flush card comes in, you turn it into a bluff. I think that's always really effective. That was kind of like that here. I did make a number of marginal decisions, right? The decision to defend the three bet pre-flop, marginal. The decision to call the bet on the flop, pretty marginal. Even the decision to bluff the river, you know, I think it was better than marginal, but it's still pretty marginal because what I'm really attacking is just pocket kings and pocket queens. If he has an ace, he's always going to call. If he hit a set of jacks, he's always going to call, you know what I mean? Like all the time. Like maybe he had something that I totally wasn't expecting, like 10-9 suited or something like that, or, you know, queen jack suited. It's all entirely possible that that was within his range as well, just because I hadn't seen him three bet earlier. Maybe he was just card dead. But, you know, it was a couple hours of him not three betting. So I figured his range was pretty strong. I do think that the range that I was attacking was pretty narrow, but my thought process in terms of what it meant that he didn't have when he checked back the turn, i.e. he didn't have a lot of big hands, he rarely had a big ace, etc., I think it was a good time to attack. So you know what? Fuck it. I am going to give myself an Obama putting a medal on himself dot meme for this one. I thought it was cool. Thought it was creative. Another one of those spots where I put myself in a marginal situation and bluff my way out of it. Always feels good. All right, my friends. I hope you guys liked this episode. We just put a bunch of bluffs on here. Those tend to be my favorite episodes because, God damn it, I just love bluffing. I just love finding cool spots for bluffs. And I think that based on the responses I've gotten from the podcast, that's one of your guys' favorite things to hear about as well. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Always appreciate you. And until next week, my friends, play good and run pure.